Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, 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 how the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who would it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's the bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. Myself, Ryan McDonald, found on Twitter. As sacked by BMAC, and Sean Mapes is back. He sat out the wrestling show last week. He couldn't handle all the hot wrestling takes RJ and I were dishing out. Shout out to RJ. His last day was Friday, but we will certainly catch up with him during the season, probably when the Texans take on the Jaguars. But Sean is back. He can be found on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes. And, of course, our man Josh behind the glass can be found on Twitter at IMJChevy. Coming up later in the show, second hour, Jeremy Brandon from the Killer Bees will be joining us at 11:30. He'll probably talk a lot of Astros with him, so don't go anywhere. Make sure you tune in for that. But let's start off right now with the Astros as well. Kind of an up and down last few days against the Oakland A's. They went on Friday, went on Saturday, and then yesterday was an ugly one. You only score one run. Javier walks practically the entire A's lineup. But let's start off with the good on Friday. J.P. France... It almost feels weird to call him a rookie because he's 28. You know, it's more like a journeyman age. I mean, he is technically a rookie, but he's 28 years old, so it always feels a little weird. But he looked great again on Friday, and it's really been a kind of a very pronounced split on his home and road to what it's been kind of predictable, actually, which is nice from if you're playing daily fantasy, you kind of know what you're getting from J.P. France, whether or not he's home or away. But France in 5 home starts this year, a 4.91 ERA versus 8 road starts, a 2.05 ERA. They were having this conversation on the Wheelhouse the other day, Sean, about kind of, you know, what's your playoff 1 through 3 in the rotation if the playoffs were to start today. If I'm looking at the Astros, I don't you kind of have to find a way to make sure? I know that's kind of against the common philosophy. Like, you wouldn't want a rookie to start a road game. That would seem to be the most popular opinion. But, I mean, looking at these – I mean, I don't know what you make of these home road splits, but I kind of want him starting the road in the playoffs wherever the Astros end up.
Yeah, no, it is a weird situation. Maybe it's because he's such a veteran rookie. That
he's been through the wars of AAA.
Yeah, he's more comfortable as a road warrior than at home. But I do think that, I mean, it is too early to start thinking about the postseason.
No, we're breaking the
rotation,
down today.
Especially because the Astros are likely to add a starter. Week plus. So the conversation might be moot pretty soon. But I do think that France has locked himself into not just a postseason rotation start, but like you said, if you don't want him to go on the road, it only makes sense for him to be the number 2 starter.
Yeah, no,
that's a pretty good case if his splits were reversed to be the number 2 starter, or if they were, you know, even, he would have a good case to be the game 2 starter in a potential playoff series. But given his dominance on the road, it does make it a little bit more of a discussion.
It feels really bold because there could be a scenario, like you said, where they're, you know, the road team in that first playoff series. It would feel very bold to have him, you know, over Javier, over Hunter Brown. But those road splits certainly have me considering it. So just to kind of underline how good France has been, because I think we all know he's been good, but if he had enough innings to qualify for the ERA crown, he'd rank ninth in all of Major League Baseball right now. He has a 3.13 ERA just behind, or I think he's actually sandwiched between a couple guys we're going to talk about later that might be on the move, that being Marcus Stroman and Jordan Montgomery. So he's right there with the guys you're talking about adding to this Astros lineup. So, I mean, Before we go on and move on to the next pitchers who follow in line in this A's Astros series, from where we were when France got called up, like, well, he's a guy that can, he's going to get you five. Like, our confidence was very low.
He needs to be
out
there.
He was a career minor leaguer.
Be all right until Urquidy gets back.
Yeah, exactly. Has your opinion of him changed? I know he's a 28-year-old rookie, so he's probably still viewed as kind of a journeyman. But has your opinion of him changed to where, like, oh, let's just hope he gets through five and doesn't kill us, to where you're actually, like, a week start-to-start basis, actually expecting really good things from him?
I wouldn't say I'm expecting, like, really good. I think that being in this place where you're pleasantly surprised with J.P. France is probably the way to go.
Probably a healthier approach,
for sure. To not just all of a sudden pencil him in to be like, all right, here's our number two. Like, here's our, you know, our stopper. It's like, no, he's still, a 28, a rookie, A, and then B, a 28-year-old rookie, which I feel like should also...
has its own category.
Yeah, it also, like... It says a lot without saying much at all, you know.
It's for sure.
But I think that for France, he is a guy who is kind of. I feel like I do trust him, but I also am like being very realistic, where I'm like, you know.
Is it because the last outing was against the A's?
A little bit of that. It's also you need more of the body of work, and he just doesn't have that much body of work.
Yeah, I think he's only, 70-something career innings at this point. Someone with a long body of work who's kind of been Jekyll and Hyde recently, Framber Valdez, was rolling until the fifth inning on Friday, then gave up three runs without allowing an extra base hit. It went single, 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 walk, sac fly, RBI, ground out, turn off the TV, because it was just – I mean, they still ended up winning the game, but that fifth inning was just a brutal watch. I don't know where you're at with Framber. It feels very hot takey searching for a topic in July, because there's nothing to talk about to raise a red flag on Framber Valdez. But since getting his ERA, Sean, to an American League leading 2.216 on June 2nd, Framber, over his last seven starts, a 4.36 ERA with only three quality starts out of those seven. Obviously, the quality start streak, I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but last year that was like his...
Yeah.
They made a shirt. They made a shirt for it. I mean, it was something that they...
It was like 25, 26 in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. Something. It was 20-something for sure. So, I mean, is there any red flag here from Framber? Is there any maybe concern of fatigue? Obviously, the multiple postseasons in a row, maybe new career highs and innings. He's been a guy that's been going... when he's right, he's going 7-8. He's even has a 9-inning start, I think, about a month ago. So, I mean, is there any red flag here with what we've seen from Framber over these last seven starts?
A small red flag. It's a little bit of a kind of every start you're like...
Just like raise your eyebrow a little bit at?
Every start you're like, it would be really nice if this is the one where he got together.
Especially against Oakland.
Especially against Oakland, too. But I think the way that he's kind of, especially the last, Saturday? Or Friday, whichever game that was.
It was Friday.
Especially the way he gave up those runs. That's not like he's not walking out there and getting shelled. You know?
No, but walking home a run is just...
Yeah, no. The walks is the biggest area of concern in the last game, in my opinion. Or no, wait. Actually, he only walked two. I was thinking of Javier.
God, yeah, Javier walked the entire lineup.
Talk about guys who are, every time he comes up, you're like, it'd be really nice if he had a clean start this time.
We're still waiting.
So I can feel a little bit better. But I think Framber, you know, to compare him to Javier, I'm less worried about Framber than I am Javier, just because the nature of how he's giving up it feels more like
he's not
fixable.
Getting right. He's not getting 450 foot shots hit off of him. Exactly. He's not walking six guys. The one thing I've noticed with Framber, and I don't know, you know, what would cause this for him, but he's obviously, not to state the obvious, but been a severe ground ball pitcher throughout his career. That's kind of been his superhuman strength, the superhero strength. Just it doesn't matter if he lets a runner on or two, because he's had issues with walks before, but he was always great at getting the ground ball double play and keeping guys on the ground in general. So over his first starts, I looked this up this morning on Baseball Reference, over his first seven starts this season, Framber induced more ground balls than fly balls in every start, which sounds like Framber. That's what he does. I mean, Verlander was always a fly ball pitcher. It would have been the opposite for him. Javier's generally been a fly ball pitcher too. But Fromber, you expect to see those numbers where he's inducing a lot of ground balls. And he did. First seven starts, like I said, ground balls, more than fly balls in every start. Over his last seven, only six of those seven, he's had more fly balls allowed than ground balls. And the one game where he had more ground balls was just by one, which was 10-9. So I don't know what would cause that. I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if he's not locating. Maybe he is, if he's having trouble with walks, and obviously not Javier levels, but just something to watch for. Like in this next start, if you start noticing some fly balls with Fromber, that might be something to look for as to know whether he's got his A stuff or not. Speaking of not having A stuff, Javier.
B or C stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of like the 28-year-old rookie of starts. Like he didn't allow any hits through the first five innings, and he also allowed five walks through those first five innings. What do you make of Javier at this point?
He's not someone that you're gonna like call down. It's not someone that you're. He's not Rafael Montero level of like, of course, my God, get this guy off my TV.
Right.
The talent that he has and the production that he had last year, and for parts of this year, it indicates that, like, hey, just give this guy time. Like, give him time to figure it out. However, every start, you're like,
the look on your face
I don't know how many more starts I'm going to be able to just be like, hey, because legitimately, every single, I guess it's only been three starts, but the Texas start on down, the Angels on the 16th and now against Oakland, all three of those starts, I was like, here we go. Here's Javier. Like, this is where he kind of gets it back on track after, I mean, his rough outings go back like so far now.
Well, his three before the All-Star break is, I think his last three starts before the All-Star break, his ERA was over 10.
Yeah. I mean, just eyeballing it, looking at the game logs right now. Looks about right.
Yeah, it was.
I can't do the napkin math, but it looks like it would be high. So I think it's something where I guess you hope it's something like mechanical that he can fix.
It seems like that's like I've heard Jeremy talk about this, and
it's like his arm slot or something.
Yeah, because like the thing about Javier was like he was never a guy that threw 98, 99. He wasn't beating you at the top of the zone with just raw velocity. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that we kept hearing this term, like the disappearing fastball or the invisible fastball.
It rises. Like,
yeah.
Something about the way he throws it.
They couldn't see it out of his hand.
Yeah.
And that seemingly from – I've heard Jeremy talk about this, and we'll ask him about it at 11:30 when he joins us. But it seems there might be something mechanical going on to where they're just picking it up. Like it, and combining that with a little bit of a drop in velocity, if hitters are picking it up and it's slower – it makes them a lot more hittable.
Yeah, that's the other, I'd say, suspect in the case of what happened to Christian Javier is the loss of velocity. And does that go back to pitching the World Baseball Classic?
I think it does. I mean, Urquidy pitched there.
I don't even think it's so acutely the World Baseball
Luis Garcia
Classic.
Did.
I think it's also the fact that this is his first year as a full-time starter. And we talk about the workload with the rookies, Hunter Brown and J.P. France, the uptick in workload that those guys are having to take on. This is also an uptick in and not being built up or having to build yourself up faster for the first year you're a full year.
On a shortened offseason because they went to Game 6 of the World Series.
Exactly. So I think it could be compounding factors. Maybe the fatigue is part of the reason.
Does he need a fake IL trip to rest his arm?
I wouldn't be against it. I wouldn't be against basically skip a start or two.
Yeah. I think two starts. Spend, I don't know. Whether the 15-day DL for pitchers, put them on the 15-day DL and have them come back in August.
But the way the Astros' rotation is right now.
What are you talking about? They have Cy Belak going out there dominating the Rockies every start.
I think they need to wait until Jose Urquidy or they make a deadline acquisition to just – literally have enough starting pitchers to where, you skip Javier's start, but now the workload on the other guys are, it's a delicate balancing act where you almost need to get a sixth starter. You need to get a fifth and then a sixth starter. And then
so that you can afford to let Javier rest.
Yes.
For sure. All right. Coming up next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, more on the Astros, but we're going to switch gears to talk about the trade deadline, which is coming up pretty quickly. Who's actually realistic? Who's not realistic? If you have any thoughts on that or what we just talked about with the Astros pitchers, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Bullpen returns in 3 minutes.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hear your family.
Look at our family now.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, Josh behind the glass. If you want to get into the conversation, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, or as Andrew Carlson would say, 377-SEX. Do you hear that piece of audio from last week? Yeah, it ended up making Chump of the Week. It didn't win Chump of the Week. That was the winner went to a John Granato-Dell combination for maybe the worst question ever asked to Glenn Davis. But, yeah, Andrew Carlson was giving out the phone line and said, instead of 3776, 3776.
What do you think was on his mind after work?
Look, I don't know. I mean, look, hey, he's doing the show with you and Joe, and he's saying sex on the air. You tell me.
I'm going to defend myself. I actually was not present that
Saturday.
Oh, that's
right. That was Cam. That was Cam. You're right. That was Cam. So,
If you call 377-SEX, get ready to pay by the minute, I would say.
The HRMP.
I think it's a 1-900.
Does HRMP sponsor that line as well?
I doubt it.
You don't think so?
Okay. We don't have an HRMP sex line?
Okay. Those are the thoughts expressed by Josh behind the glass, not Brian McDonald.
Treasures sponsors that one.
And it's just around the corner. There's a couple just around the corner. All right. Let's move it right along before we get in trouble. The Astros trade deadline's coming up. There's been a lot of conversation on this station. I've heard of the Killer Bees and the Wheelhouse. I'm sure the bench talked about it in between coughs. But, like, who's actually untouchable on this Astros roster? And I ran down a list, and I'll try to make it quick, so stop me if you disagree with something.
I think I have one.
You have one disagreement?
I have one bone to pick.
All right, so the obvious obvious untouchable, there's no scenario where I'd even consider trading them. Yordan, Altuve, Fromber, and Tucker.
Good?
Okay.
Although Tucker could be in the next category. But
yeah, Tucker, only because of his contract.
Yes.
All right. So and the only – maybe, we'll get into it in a minute. The probably untouchable, unless it's for Ohtani, I would say Javier, although that's becoming less and less by the day. Hunter Brown, Ryan Presley, Brian Abreu, and Alex Bregman. Presley and Abreu, maybe not necessarily on recent performance, because what would your other options be if you moved them?
You need to keep – that's the trouble with trading from your major league rosters, that you're trading them to make a win-now move, but – now you just traded your closer in eighth inning.
Now you got to make another move.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So it
sounds like no disagreements there.
No disagreements.
Okay. The only moving for the Dylan Cease, Luis Robert tier, Hector Neris, Jeremy Pena, which I'm feeling less and less about that by the day too. Yonner Diaz, Drew Gilbert, and Chaz McCormick.
Chaz McCormick.
Okay. So where would you put?
That's who I'm calling up to the stand.
Okay.
I think he's untouchable unless it's for Ohtani.
Obviously he had an AL player of the week recently. He could get moved up to the tier above that along with Javier and Bregman. He's been playing really well recently.
It's not even just recently. For the entire year, the only Astros with a higher OPS than Chaz McCormick, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker.
Wow.
End of list. Third best hitter on the Astros for the entire season.
I would still consider it for if you
Cease
get Dylan. So I feel I hear your argument and you're probably right. He probably does need a little bit of a bump up, at least above Jeremy Pena the way he's played this season. But Chaz has been fantastic.
That's my one bone to pick. The rest of this
Rusty, do you co-sign? Yeah, so I'd love to move him, but no team will take him. And Abreu, Montero, Maldi. I mean, we'd move him, but
untouchable.
But untouchable because
in
they
the
suck.
Opposite,
right? Yeah,
no one wants to touch them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 10-foot pole scenario. So that being said, that kind of brings up the next part of this equation, and people will talk about, oh, we need to add a bat, an arm, and a starter and a bullpen arm. But I mean, a lot of these guys. You're not going to really move. It really leaves, and this is the next tier of this list. Like, what does that actually leave you for a move to get a non-superstar player, assuming you're not getting Ohtani, Cease, or Luis Robert? It leaves you J.P. France, Brandon Belak, Maton, Jake Myers, Corey Jolks, and every prospect not named Drew Gilbert. I mean, I think you could get things with those guys, and we sang the praises, last segment for J.P. France. But I think you're getting bullpen arms. You're getting guys. You might get some. You might get a batter or starting pitcher, but it'd be a rental.
Deals.
Yeah, it'd be a rental. You're not getting the upper tier. So if those are the only guys you're worth, you'd consider dealing, then go ahead and strike Ohtani off the list. Go ahead and strike Dylan Cease and Luis Robert off the list, because those guys aren't getting moved for those players on that part of the tier. So, but to play. Kind of just live in the fantasy world for a second. There was an article put out by Fox Sports just giving like the cost for what an Ohtani trade would be for, I think it was like 10, 12 teams in Major League Baseball. So there's quite a few, probably more than are actually in on Ohtani.
Yeah.
And so the projected trade for Ohtani for the Houston Astros, they were on the list, was Drew Gilbert, the Astros' top prospect who we just mentioned, Hunter Brown, Colin Barber, who's another outfield prospect. I believe he's the second or third highest prospect in the system, and then the other guy being outfielder Ryan Clifford, another prospect who's also in the top three or four of the Astros system. So you're talking about arguably the three top prospects in their system, which are all outfielders, plus Hunter Brown. Sean, if that was the offer for Ohtani, if the Angels call you and say, you offer that, you got a deal. It is Ohtani, but it's for 2 months because he's not re-signing here. I think we're all realistic to that fact. Would you make that trade for Ohtani?
I don't think you do. I don't think.
What's the deal breaker? Is it Hunter Brown?
Yeah, I think it's mostly Hunter Brown. I'd say also Drew Gilbert is like, you're not comfortable because you're training Drew Gilbert, by far the best prospect in your.
Oh, yeah, he's number one by far.
And you're trading him for 2 months of Ohtani, where it's just, I just think in baseball, you just need a. It's less about like the superstars, it's more just having a lot of really good players. That's how the Astros have kind of built this thing.
True.
That's why the Angels are trading Ohtani is because
they had the two really good players and no one else.
Yes. Yeah. So I am against like the Astros I'm against the Astros making a move for Ohtani that the Angels would actually accept. Like, yeah, of course I can come up with trades where I'd be comfortable making it, but they would not say yes to it. But I think giving up like the cost control future of the best cost-controlled pitcher you have in your organization, Hunter Brown, and probably the best cost-controlled hitter in your organization, especially going forward more than 2 years.
Two and three also.
Yes. I just don't see how that's how that is sustainable unless you can re-sign Ohtani even for 1 year. If you can get 2024, if you can sign up to a one-year $80 million contract or whatever it would take.
Very NBA, yeah.
Because he's a $40 million hitter or a $40 million pitcher.
Right.
Here's 80, Shohei. Unless you can do that, I don't think you should trade your top two prospects.
The tough thing is you're not really going to know before this deal gets done. But if I could be guaranteed.
Get in a room with Ohtani.
Well, if I could be guaranteed two things. One, you get this the second year. And two, Yordan Altuve stay healthy throughout the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Like if I could be guaranteed that, screw Drew Gilbert and all the prospects and Hunter Brown, I'm moving it in. And look, I mean, Drew Gilbert is a top prospect, but top prospects don't always hit. When we could go top prospect by top prospect, throughout the years, they don't always hit. The only guy that's actually proven anything on the major league level here, of course, is Hunter Brown, and we've obviously had issues, recent issues with him this year. Goal. So, yeah, if I hate to do it for 1 year, but if Ohtani could give us two and you knew Yordan and Altuve were ready to go, then I think you just take this window, maximize it for all you can, and then worry about, you know, 2025 and after down the road. But
that's,
I mean,
the prospects is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're the LA Rams.
Yeah. Look, this farm system, it's not like you could replace the entire major league roster right now. Anyway, the minor league system right now, it's only got a few top level prospects. So it's not like if you don't resign the guys you have right now, like Altuve and Bregman and Fromburn, you don't have a lot of guys ready to go anyway. So you might as well maximize this window. My one concern beyond that, and we'll get to break here in a second, but if you do sign Ohtani, I mean, he's DHing. He's the DH. He's not going to play anywhere else. So if you did do this, what would you feel about Yordan having to play left field every single game? Because that kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it.
It just.
Especially,
I don't know if it's a reason to not do the trade, but it worries me.
Yeah, even at the Sugar Land Space Cowboys game on Friday for ESPN 97.5 night, thanks to all the listeners who came out. When I saw Yordan jog out there at the top of the first
step
to left
easy,
field,
big man. Step
yeah,
easy.
I was like, man, they're really putting him in left field for a Sugar Land game. I was like, I guess he has to, because he will play left field when he gets to the Astros in a couple days, or a week or so.
Yeah, I think he'll be up on Monday when the Rangers get here.
So I was like, I guess, but yeah, I'm treating him with a lot of kid gloves when it comes to playing the field. And so
that would be really risky putting him out in left field every day.
That makes you queasy.
Especially for the road games. Like, it's one thing at Minute Maid, he doesn't have to run as far, but any road games would worry
Maybe
me a
Ohtani
lot.
Maybe Ohtani plays left field in you're
only here for 1 year, buddy. Yeah. You get out and left field.
We'll treat him like DeMarco Murray, like the Cowboys treated DeMarco
like
Murray.
Like run him into the ground.
Give him 400 carries. Who cares?
All right, coming up next on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, the bullpen will return. And when we do, we got to get into some Houston Texans conversation with training camp starting just around the corner. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Is it football season yet?
The men who play it are the best there are. Disciplined professionals who perform on a stage 100 yards long.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Good bump back music choice here, Josh. Beastie Boys never go wrong for me. So teased into the last break, and it's again Brian McDonald at Sack by BMAC, Sean Mapes at Sean A. Mapes, and Josh, I am Jay Chevy behind the glass. If you have any thoughts on what we're about to talk about here or anything on the Astros, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So the Texans start camp this week. What day is it exactly? I don't remember the exact day, but I know it's this week.
Wednesday, I
think. Wednesday? Okay.
Texans insider Sean Mapes confirms. I think it's Wednesday.
I hope you also don't leave to start a Texans venture.
A little inside
baseball there. So with the Houston Texans training camp just around the corner, wanted to get your thoughts on a few kind of Texans related things. Like, I don't want to go too much of a deep dive because they haven't even put on pads yet.
Yeah.
That'll
be next week where we go.
It's going to be super hard. Yeah, exactly. Super hard-o football guy. A lot of high testosterone in that segment coming up next week. But this week, a little less high T. Texans talk still, but a little less high T. So, first question to you, Sean, looking ahead at the Texans training camp. What position group are you most confident, least confident heading into camp this week?
Is it cheating to say the tackles? Or do I have to say the offensive line?
I think you have to say the offensive line.
Then I'm not picking the offensive line.
Okay. So you have that little faith in Kenyon Green then?
Yeah. And a rookie center?
In a rookie center.
I actually, to answer it kind of backwards, the least confident is the interior line.
Whoa. So your most confident is the offensive tackles, least confident the interior offensive line. Yeah. So Shaq Mason didn't do anything for you, or is he just not enough?
He's not enough. There's three positions. Two of them I feel like actively bad about.
Actively, is keeping you up at night?
Not actively bad, but I would say I'm concerned Okay. I'm concerned.
I mean, it's
I'm
fair concerned to be about concerned Kenyon about Green, a rookie center for sure.
Rookie center, and then a sophomore guard who didn't exactly light it up. His
whose
rookie year
grades were positive, I think, for the most part in the run game, but bad in pass blocking. And you have a rookie quarterback.
Rookie quarterback. So you're going to have to find some way to limit the pressure directly in his face, because that's ask any quarterback, that's the least favorite thing. So. That's the way to stop Tom Brady and every other quarterback. So I think it might work for C.J. Stroud.
Can we sidetrack for just a second? I hated that talking point on Tom Brady.
Got to rush with
four. Yeah,
bring it up the
way
middle.
To beat Tom Brady is to beat him up the middle and make him move his feet. Yeah, every quarterback in history.
Yeah.
If Warren Sapp or Aaron Donald beats this guy right away and is instantly in his face, it's going to be bad for the offense.
Passer rating goes down. Yeah. So I think that's the if I have to choose like an actual group for the one I feel best about, I'd say the secondary.
Yeah, see, I was going to say safeties. So I think my top two would be safeties and offensive line, but you kind of broke it down in tackles. I mean, it's tackles and safeties, right? Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie, who I think we're all expecting to take a big second year leap. I mean, that's the strength of the team, right?
Yeah, that is the strength of the team. And go back to the line, which you win the game in the trenches. I've always said that.
Football guy Sean Mapes.
I think that the overall you can feel positive about the offensive line because of the tackles, because of
Shaq Mason.
Because of Shaq Mason. It's just when you think about specifically the interior of it, that's where I start.
I mean, they
to get
won
worried.
Three games. No position group's going to be perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. That is. That's also a good point. But, to go through the other kind of do you have any other position group that you feel particularly good about besides secondary?
No, it's safety and offensive line. Okay. That's really it.
It's secondary.
I guess maybe you could say tight end because Dalton Schultz, like Dalton Schultz isn't going to set the world on fire. He's not going to go out and get 1,000 yards. He's not going to do anything special. But he at least represents something to where I could pencil in solid play.
Yeah.
For like 17 games, solid play. Maybe he doesn't win you a game, but he doesn't cost you a game.
Yeah, yeah. I think there would be games where he's awesome, and there's games where he's just kind of out there.
He's average, right, yeah. So I don't feel like he's going to cost you at any point. So I guess I would feel confident in tight end as well. And I mean, it's really just about Dalton Schultz. So I agree with you there. Safety and offensive tackle / offensive line. I think... Is it universe? I know you said interior offensive line is what you're least confident in, but to me, like the obvious pick is wide receiver, right?
Okay, that was my second one. Well, I was gonna ask you a leading question.
Okay, ask.
Are you worried about the wide receivers more because of the actual wide receiver play, or because of the fact that they are getting balls from a rookie quarterback?
Oh man, because
the worry for me, I am more worried about the
wide
receivers.
So you think they're competent, but maybe not good enough to elevate a rookie quarterback?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I just think that you're making it an uphill battle for C.J. Stroud.
Definitely.
Giving them these guys, as opposed to if Deshaun Watson was still the quarterback, you wouldn't
feel... He could elevate these
guys. You wouldn't feel great about Robert Woods, John Metchie, Noah Brown, Tank Dell, Nico Collins. But there's at least, you feel confident in the passing game as a whole because of the quarterback. Now you're asking more of the quarterback and a guy, and your quarterback's a guy who hasn't taken a snap in the NFL.
Yeah, it's funny because I mean, it really does. I think it is the quarterback side of it, because when I'm thinking as you're talking, I mean, you look at that Chiefs wide receiver room and you got MVS, you got Sky Moore, you got rookie Rasheed Rice. There's a lot of Jags in that room.
Yeah, and
it doesn't matter because it's Patrick Mahomes.
And I think the Texans wide receiver group is a bunch of NFL Jags.
It's like really not any different.
With two, actually, I would say there's two guys that right now are Jaggy, are Jags, but they also are rookies. Or John Metchie hasn't played. Does he classify as a rookie?
Yeah,
do that?
I think he does.
Okay,
I
know the NBA. If you don't take a
like Hunter Brown's still a rookie, even though he played last year.
So you have two rookies in John Metchie and Tank Dell. Maybe they break out. Maybe they take a step up and they're more than just another guy out there. But I think for the coming into the season, you're looking at this and you go, we got five guys that are all they should be NFL receivers on any NFL team. They could get playing time.
I just hope we're not having conversations like we've had with past Texans rookie quarterbacks. Like, well, they're not playing well, but it's not their fault because everything around them is terrible. I mean, we've had that conversation, obviously. With David Carr, it was the offensive line. Mm.
With Watson, it was also the offensive line.
Yeah, he got hit a lot. I mean, he didn't tear his ACL because of them, but he did get hit a lot that rookie season. It's just they didn't equip C.J. Stroud to get the most out of him in year one. And the hope is, and we won't know, for months, is if that hinders his progress. Quickly before we go to break. I didn't want to do too much of a deep dive on the Texans. That's because we got to get into something else related to the NFL and maybe the worst list of all time, definitely of this week, definitely of the last 4 days. Doug Clawson from CBS ranked his top 10 clutch quarterbacks. So, number one, Patrick Mahomes. No problem.
Disagree.
There.
No. Yeah.
Hot take. He didn't beat the...
What has he ever done?
He didn't beat the Brady and the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. Fraud. So the remaining top 10 is where we really have problems. No problem there with Mahomes being in number one.
No problem with number two.
You said you trying to trigger me here? I feel like you're trying to trigger
me. Say
who's
number two.
All right, two is Tua Tagovailoa. Really? The only thing I feel like he's done more clutching the brains to the inside of his head.
That's ugly.
Yeah, that's ugly. So two is Tua. Three, Kirk Cousins?
Came back from... What was that, 27 to nothing?
Now, he points out in the article, just all the records the Vikings set as far as comebacks last year. And
they were good in close games.
They were, but, it's hard. He's also part of the reason they were behind. And you also
is only clutch time.
It is only clutch time. But you also have to factor in, I don't have the record in front of me. I should have pulled this before we got to the segment. But Kirk Cousins' record in performance outside of the noon window if you put him under any sort of primetime spotlight, which I think to me is related to clutch, it's at least clutch adjacent. He's horrible. So I
think it's too high. But I do think that he's a guy where if you take the name off of it, if you could just
look at the stats.
Yeah, if you could just take a pill that makes you forget that it's Kirk
the purple
Cousins,
pill, obviously.
Yes, then I think we would think more highly of him as a player. I disagree with the list.
So Mahomes fine, Tua and Kirk Cousins are odd. 4, 5, 6. I would disagree with the order, but they all deserve to be top six and above Cousins and Tua. Lamar, Josh Allen, and Burrow is at number six. How Burrow is he not two? He should be two, right?
That's the easy. Burrow should be two on this list, and I don't really know how to parse Jackson versus Allen.
No, I don't either. They both deserve to be,
because neither of them have particular
Allen clutch. Allen would have been to Super Bowl if not for Patrick Mahomes and overtime rolls. So I think I give him a little bit of a tiebreaker, whereas Lamar only has the one playoff win.
Yeah. I was trying to think as a clutch time quarterback, the pelts on the wall. Not so much who I would actually want leading.
What have they actually proven?
For both of them, you mentioned the AFC championship game divisional game from 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was. There was also an AFC championship game as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, Allen would have been to a Super Bowl now if not for overtime roles.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, the game-winning drive, that these guys have had. And although Lamar has had some field goal drives that he
with the clutchest kicker of all time, Justin Tucker.
So I'm not sure how much credit he gets for that. But let's go on.
Quickly, we got to finish the list. Jimmy Garoppolo at number seven. I just hate with the raised voice. Why? What? Who? If he was clutch, they wouldn't have blown a 10-point lead in the Super Bowl. Doesn't the argument stop and end there?
Yeah. Keep going.
Wrong. Yes, exactly. No further explanation needed. 8, Dak Prescott. just talk to any Cowboys fans. Those how bad? I mean, can we not forget him sliding and not spiking the ball or whatever it was in that playoff game a couple years ago?
I think he should be higher on this list, but it has nothing to do with his actual.
It's just the other names. Like, yes. Yeah, 100%. Then 9 and 10, Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff. I mean, certainly Aaron Rodgers should be ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo. Come on.
He should be top five.
He should be.
He should be higher than most. I mean, honestly. You can make a case for him being three by pelts on the wall, even if you limit it to like last 5 years.
Again,
like,
just ask Cowboys fans. I think they have some memories of Aaron Rodgers doing some things against them. Jared Goff, I mean.
This is where it divorces from like he might be a clutch quarterback. Like the Lions.
It's another one, you have to remove the name.
Mm-hmm, the if Lions you won be some fair. Clutch games last year, but then like if you go like. If you're listening, who you want to have a clutch drive, or who you want as quarterback to start a clutch
drive.
It's
not Goff.
I'm not saying his name 10th, 9th,
7th. I might say him above Jimmy G, but I don't know how many other quarterbacks. I'll tell you this. I would pick Jared Goff over Baker Mayfield. There you go.
Okay.
Compliments to you, Jared Goff.
Two or Jared Goff, and we can leave after this.
Okay, I'll take two over Jared Goff.
There we go.
Yeah, all right.
There we go. We got to get non-agenda.
I used to be in a fantasy league with a rapid... crazy to a non-member, and it drove me insane. But we got to get to break. Coming up next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Madden ratings are out, and we are mad. We'll tell you why next. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sweet sassy molassy.
Clever metaphors and catchphrases escape me, like a fat girl waving her trophy from the smell contest. Sweet sassy molassy, I'm trying my best here.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
Not cool, Spencer. Not cool. Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes here with me, of course, at Sean A. Mapes. I am Brian McDonald at Sacked by BMAC on Twitter, and our man Josh behind the glass at IMJ Chevy. And we're getting into the Madden 24 ratings. Madden coming out, of course, next month, as it always does in August. But the ratings have been released. Feels like they've taken the track that a lot of awards do now in sports, where they put out like one per day to kind of drag out the media attention. It seems like Madden's been doing that. But we'll start here just with the quarterbacks, and I thought it'd be fun, and Sean agreed as well, where we would talk about just like our dumb outrage on like certain like Madden ratings, because I mean you can't take this seriously, yes. But it's fun to have fake outrage on these ratings.
So not only is it just like they just like spit out a rating number, where it's like, you know, it's based off of all these.
Doesn't Pro Football Focus help them, or I don't know.
Chad Ochocinco helped them.
He might. Chad Ochocinco takes me as someone who deeply cared about his Madden rating back in the day.
Yes. I think that this is very, very dumb, because not only is this a bad video game I have no intention in buying.
Yeah. I used to be like, I think everyone that would be listening to sports talk radio, I used to play Madden obsessively. But
yeah. I think I topped out around like 09, 10,
okay, I went 12 range. I went further than that, and it was mostly like I think the last time I played like a ton was Madden 2019, and that was only because there was a group of us, Paul Gallant included, Josh Beard included, that would play, you know, in like a group league.
Oh yeah.
Until Paul got really mad at us for making a bunch of trades.
I was gonna say,
quit.
I've heard stories about this.
Yeah, he only lasted for about a season. But anyway, I would get into that. We had like 5-6 people in like an online dining. See, that was fun. But as far as just like sitting down and playing the computers, like I can't.
And
it's just plus Madden's, it feels like they've kind of melded in for a long time.
I think that's where like I stopped buying it. Because like I was a kid and I could only afford like so many video games a year,
of course.
And so it became non-essential.
Oh, very much so.
And then,
especially now with Game Pass, like I mean, I can wait until you know like February and then get it for free,
and then play
keep playing last year's game, you know, up until a certain point.
Yeah,
so.
and by the time like I was able to like afford to, like, I could just buy it every year if I wanted to. I don't want to. The game stinks. So I think it's, with all that being said, of how I think the game stinks, I'm not going to buy it. Still, when I see these graphics that they tweet out, and
it triggers something.
I see the list,
doesn't it?
And I'm like, yeah. Wait, who's ahead of Kyler Murray?
That is on my list. Okay, let's start with the quarterbacks. Okay, so number one, obviously Patrick Mahomes, no surprise. He's a 99 overall. So is his teammate Travis Kelce. Joe Burrow's number two, Josh Allen three, Lamar Jackson four. Here's where I start to have a problem. Not with his rank, not with like where he ranks. Fifth is fine. But
Hurts?
Jalen Hurts an 88? Doesn't it feel like he should be like a 91? I mean, we just talked about Josh Allen would have a Super Bowl if not for Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's kind of like the people who didn't win a ring when Michael Jordan was there. It's hard to hold it against him because he's a generational guy. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes. Jalen Hurts, I mean, they were right there in the fourth quarter. They played really well throughout the game. They obviously didn't get blown out.
He definitely should have been a 90.
Yeah, he should at least be like a 91,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't. So you compare him to Lamar at 91, Hurts at 88. What exactly makes Lamar so much better than Hurts?
That, yeah,
even
I agree.
In a video
That's
game,
my question.
Even if I'm saying like in a video game, like obviously being a running quarterback, like that just boosts your numbers a little bit. Hurts is also a running quarterback.
He's better around the goal line. Yeah, he's better around the goal line.
And as a passer, I give Hurts a more than a slight edge, but not a massive one.
You got to give Hurts the durability as well.
Yeah, durability. Sure. Yeah.
Durability. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Hurts, he should at least be like tied with Lamar.
I think you could definitely make an argument that he should be ahead of Lamar.
Yeah, he should probably. Yeah,
but he's at least should be rated in the 90s. That's my main issue. Is not so much that he's fifth, is that he's an 88. Like that feels way too low.
Mm-hmm.
Right, any problems? So the rest of the top 10, Herbert, these are all in the 80s. Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Cousins at 84, and then Tuanon at 10.
Dak I would have in the Cousins range.
Yeah.
I would give Cousins
and
Dak.
Yeah, drop him down a few points.
I would give Cousins and Dak the same rating.
Yeah, so going into like the second part of the...
Yes, the 11 to 20.
Let's get into that, because I got two major problems with this. And look, we just spent last segment talking in part that we wouldn't trust him to lead a late fourth quarter drive. But Jared Goff's got to be ahead of Geno, right? I mean, Geno's done it for one season.
Yeah.
I mean, Goff isn't great, but he's put up, you know, respectable numbers for what, like five, six seasons by now?
Yeah. So Geno is 12th at 81. Trevor, we didn't say Trevor's 82 at
11.
No,
I hadn't mentioned his name.
Geno
yet.
81 at 12, Goff 80 at 13. That, and then I'll get to my gripe, the next guy.
I share that gripe.
Jared Goff, I think Jared Goff should be higher. Jared Goff should honestly be about Trevor Lawrence range, because they both are toolsy guys that don't really run that much, but also don't have that many like pelts on the wall. So
yeah, I think Goff being like an 83, 84 would be fair.
Yeah.
I think up a couple points. At least being put ahead of Geno.
I think he's decent, but not awesome. Next is my biggest grade.
Yeah, I agree.
Rating at 79 overall, good for 14th among quarterbacks. Kyler Murray.
No.
Listen, guys.
Stupid.
I get that we don't like Kyler Murray now. I get it. I get that the football watching community and the football, everyone involved with football.
Everyone involved in football outside the state of Arizona.
Is down on Kyler Murray.
Are you trying to be funny? Down on Kyler Murray?
Oh, no, that wasn't a short joke.
Okay.
That was a short joke. I get that we're all low on him. Teeny tiny. We have a fun-sized opinion of him right now. In no world is Geno Smith better than Kyler Murray. What are we doing?
Kyler Murray's been the MVP conversation. Look, he's hurt. That's what this is. He's hurt, and he lost DeAndre Hopkins because Hopkins went and got himself suspended. I mean, his stats downgrade has just been injury and losing Hopkins. He's not suddenly like, I don't know what
Smith had 9 good games last year.
Right. I don't know what Kyler Murray was rated last year. I would have guessed based off of play, he'd have been around 86 or 87. I don't know. I'm completely guessing. He didn't drop 8-9 points in play. He just got hurt. That's what this was.
And even going with like, obviously, this is Madden. The fact that he's fast.
Yes, video game. Yes, strictly for a video game. I mean, is there any more of a player who's a better video game player than a real life player? It's Kyler. No. He should be rated better.
He's definitely, I mean, not only are we the most upset about this, I guarantee you Kyler Murray is the most upset. Oh, my God.
I mean, they had to put put the clause in his contract, right? Because of his video game playing.
I guarantee you he is more upset than we are. The rest of the list, it's. I don't have many major gripes with the rest of it. Problem with it. They're all just
I do
like,
find it funny that Deshaun Watson's in the 70s.
They're all just very funny. That's what I was going to say.
Screw you, Deshaun.
Derek Carr, Deshaun Watson, 78s. Garoppolo Wilson, 77s. Tannehill Field, 76s.
Yeah.
That is just a funny group of players that you can't really argue with. Maybe
Jimmy Garoppolo's fair. Tannehill's very fair.
Yeah, maybe go like Justin Fields. Like
I'd bump down Tannehill just a little bit.
I mean,
as far
Fields
as
is kind of in the Kyler conversation, right? I mean, he's
3 points away from him. I'm just saying, as far as
he's a perfect video game player. He's someone that's people are gonna like more in a video game than in real life.
Yeah, Justin Fields is closer to Kyler than Kyler is to Tua in this according to Madden rating.
All right, I got a couple more quick gripes. I don't know if you do well, Sean. We can't go through any more lists because we're too close to break.
Give me yours rapid.
So DeAndre Hopkins still a 93? No, sorry, I don't see it.
Reputation 93.
Yeah, that's a reputation 93. Look, I love Terry McLaurin. I have him on my dynasty team, but he's not better than AJ Brown. There's no world where Terry McLaurin should be rated ahead of AJ Brown.
I don't think he's better than Amari either.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. At least not what he's proven on the field so far. Mike Williams of the Chargers above DK? You serious? I mean, the six games a year Mike Williams plays? No. DK's a double-digit touchdown machine.
You can't hold him for being injured.
I mean, DK is part of the reason why Geno Smith's rated too high, so no.
I think Mike Evans is underrated, just to get that one in. I think he's perpetually underrated.
Maybe so. And my last one, Jonathan Taylor and Austin Eckler only being 1 point of Tony Pollard. I mean, I know everyone's in love with Tony Pollard, but, I mean, I think Taylor and Eckler are proven way more in the field than Tony Pollard.
Yeah, for sure.
To be only 1 point ahead of him?
That might be a wearing a Cowboy star in your helmet.
But. Yeah, maybe so. Are the developers based out of Dallas? You got any gripes real quick before we go to break?
The Tony Pollard one was one that, caught my eye. Also, in the – this is very funny – the 11-20 among running backs, Ezekiel Elliott is an 84. He's a free agent running back, Ezekiel Elliott.
I think the league is telling us he's not an 84 anymore.
Yeah, that to me, that's just like a...
Which I believe is, we didn't get into any Texans, which I believe is 1 point higher than Damian Pierce. Is it Pierce an 83?
Yeah, one point higher than Damian Pierce. The highest is obviously Laremy Tunsil at a 95.
Who also has the top pass block rating in the game.
Yes. Then you have Jimmy Ward at an 87.
That's
and
fair.
And then, hold on, I have to kind of do this by scrolling through.
The one standout for the Texans roster, other than what we've talked about, is the wide receivers look terrible.
Yeah.
If you're running a Madden franchise with the Texans, you're going to be making some trades.
You're trading for DeAndre Hopkins, probably.
Yeah, probably so. All right, we got to get to break, though, because next segment, the award-winning, the often copied, but never...
Groundbreaking.
Yeah, groundbreaking, obviously. The Mount Rushmore Plus One returns when we get back here in the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
I've seen the huge difference it's made for you in the gym, at work, and in the bedroom.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.